Midwifery for the People is a podcast about reimagining the way we approach the entirety of the birthing year. Margot's goal is to combine her radical imagination with her knack for strategizing to bolster the birth revolution and a larger global revolution of feminine consciousness. Midwifery for the People is a production of the Indie Birth Association and IndieBirth.org. No material on this podcast should be considered medical advice. Birth is not a medical event. Now here's your host, Margot Blackstone.
Hey, welcome to this episode of Midwifery for the People with me, Margot Blackstone. Last episode, I talked about this idea of dancing with death as a birth worker and just talked more broadly about the cultural context we find ourselves in as birth workers here in the US, at least, and in much of the Western world. I think this all applies. And just gave some background about why I'm interested in this topic and alluded to the fact that I would probably be talking more about it. And guess what? I am. And I have been trying to be less structured with these episodes. And this, I hope, is interesting to people beyond people who just know me personally. But I am going to talk a little bit more personally about what has been happening in my life in the way that this relationship with death has been changing and unfolding, and how that all ties back to my work as a birth worker, and what it means when we tie it to some of these larger threads within the social context that we live in. So this is a little bit more of the backstory, but also, like I said, trying to tie it in and use it as an example of, you know, what it really looks like to be in this work, both as a woman and a human and as a birth worker. And there's some other sort of more nitty-gritty topics I also want to get into in the next couple episodes, but this is where I felt right to continue the conversation that I started on the last episode. So I had shared before that there's been these couple pieces over the last bunch of years, and it recently was the 4-year anniversary of attending a birth where a baby very unexpectedly died, and I was the midwife. And that was an enormous turning point in my life, and it doesn't feel right to share in this context the story of that, since it's not my story to share, other than the ways in which it has impacted me. And very interestingly, on the 3rd anniversary of this experience, this baby's birth and death, I experienced my first panic attack that I ever had in my life. And I had the experience of anxiety on and off throughout life. That is definitely something that's been really present for me. But this whole panic attack thing, I'd seen family members experience it, friends experience it, but I personally had not experienced it. And I knew that this date was coming up, but I also had a million other things going on. I was about to finalize my divorce a few weeks after that, and was trying to my house and also look at houses to buy for me and my kids. I also, you know, had been told by my ex-husband, my now ex-husband, that he was going to be moving out of state, possibly across the ocean to Hawaii, which is where he is now. So a lot was happening. This was about a year ago, almost exactly a year ago. And all of these things were coming together. I also had 2 kids who were in school for the first time ever, one of whom was extremely temperamental about going to school, and it was often a huge production to even get him there. And then there was also this new thing in our family dynamic of we had been separated and we're trying to do a little bit of back and forth. The kids would hang out with their dad a couple hours a few times a week. So there was also this going back and forth and having to navigate this new co-parenting relationship while also knowing it was going to end because he was moving away. So just trying to set the scene for you here. So I knew that this date was coming up of the baby's birth and death, that it was the 3-year anniversary, but I didn't actually mentally compute that it was this particular day. I think until the next day after I had the panic attack and was like, wow, that is so wild. Like how the body remembers, how it holds that. And it did not feel like a coincidence. Right. And so if you haven't had a panic attack before, I don't know that I even can try to explain what it's like, but it felt like I was dying. And I had actually even had nightmares that previous night that there was something actually physically wrong with me. And I'm not going to get into all the details. There's like a bigger story wrapped into all of this where it's wild. Someone actually in my town that I vaguely knew, a friend of a friend, died the next day after my panic attack of the thing that I dreamt I had experienced. So that's crazy too, but that's a sidebar. So I had these nightmares. I woke up feeling scared. It was also Easter Sunday, and I was gonna put out eggs for the kids and do an Easter egg hunt and take them to church. I was going to a Unitarian church at the time. And I think they were going to do an egg hunt too. It was like, okay, it's a nice Sunday. So the kids did the egg hunt, but I was still feeling weird. And then after that, I just had a panic attack. Thought I was dying. Thought I was having some sort of stroke or a blood clot or something. And my vision tunneled. I felt like I couldn't breathe. And it was really scary. And this was actually coming off of a whole winter time too of being alone, just me and my 2 kids in my house, which was a 5-acre farm right outside of town, but still it felt like you were in the country. And I was having a lot of anxiety, especially about just this fact of being alone with them. It felt so scary to feel alone with them. If something happened to me, or if something happened to us and nobody knew, and my kids were, oldest was 8 at the time, and so theoretically could have called for help. Didn't feel like super reliable. We're still at the point of, okay, if something happened, what would you do? How does that look? It just felt really isolated and I was having a lot of fear about that. And what I have now realized, so I had this panic attack, which I feel was absolutely attached to the grief and experience of being the midwife at this birth where the baby had died, and some of the stuff I'm about to talk about wrapped around that, right? Like the blame piece, the shame piece, the guilt. I did a lot of work with a lot of different really amazing practitioners, mental health people, and still I knew that there was a connection here. And I think the threads will come together as we go. But what I've learned since, and I've had more panic attacks since then. I had another one like a week later, and then I had one or two over the summer into the fall. And then at Christmas time, so there's a theme here, yes, holidays. Around Christmas time, right after Christmas, I had another one that was like all the others had been. And then a few days later, I had just the most incredible panic attack. And I guess, what do I want to say about that? It feels like this could be an entire case study over many episodes. But in all of my learning about mental health, in my experiences with other people close to me having panic attacks, I had not heard of someone experiencing it quite like I did. It was many hours. It started around like midnight, similarly, nightmares, panic attack, went back to sleep, and then it started again in the morning. And I did not feel normal. I did not feel like I wasn't having a panic attack, let's say that, until I woke up the next morning. So it was a good 24 hours of could not shift out of this activation, no matter what I did, no matter what breathing practices, no matter what my internal dialogue was, nothing worked, including the hard drugs that I got at the emergency room, because that's where I went, because I was like, surely I am having a stroke. Like, I've had panic attacks, but like this one feels different. And I did spend a couple hours in the emergency room. Nothing was physically wrong. But even with major benzos, I was given Ativan. And I wanted it. I will be very clear. I really wanted it. I wasn't pressured to take it or anything. Even with that, my blood pressure and pulse was unreal. Like, they were so high. I won't even tell you. You'd be too scared to know how high they were. Even with being given these anxiolytic drugs, right? They discharged me. They gave me some more drugs. I went home. And I think I took some that first night, but that was it. They made me feel so gross. And they didn't take away the actual physical sensations. My body was still anxious. It was still in this highly activated state. And it stayed there for the majority of the time and for about another month. It was insane. There was one day that I felt a little bit more normal a few days after this. And was like, oh, okay, great. Things are going back to normal. Because in the past, my panic attacks, like, I felt normal once they were over and maybe took a nap or slept it off. And the next day I was fine. This was not like that. My body was at the end of its rope for many different reasons. I've outlined some of them, including like their dad leaving and being with them alone. We moved to a new city in September, next door to one of my very best friends who's amazing. And then winter happened and I was with my kids at home working on these businesses and felt like things were going pretty well. And then my body very clearly told me that was not the case. And so I'm telling you all this, one, just again, to set the stage and the background for what's really set me on this new course in the last couple months, because this all happened in January. My mom came and stayed with me afterwards because I was literally not functional. Could not function. The only time I felt okay was if I was on my Peloton biking. I just had so much I needed to discharge and look at and sit with and process, and it all was demanding that I do it right then. What I realized during those first couple weeks of the big one, and something that I was processing a lot with a variety of helpers, was I realized that I was so terrified, not of my own death, but what I was terrified of was leaving my kids behind and dying and then them being without a parent because their dad had moved away and is largely unreliable. We'll leave it there for the moment. So that's what I had to really sit with. And I just sat in my bathtub and sobbed and did really amazing internal family systems work, IFS. And I'd been doing that for the panic attacks and for over the past year prior to that and really enjoyed it. But I did some more intensive IFS sessions with my amazing therapist and looked closer at that and healed some ancestral wounds. One of which, something that came up was my own grief of not getting to meet and know one of my grandparents. My grandfather died when my mom was pregnant with me. And I was actually in the room at the ER as a fetus, like baby me was inside my mom, when he was pronounced dead. So she was there when that happened. And there was always this grief. I remember as a young kid when he would get brought up, just feeling, you know, so sad that I didn't get to meet him. And I don't know if this is a thing I should share. Let's see. I guess I'll share it because I think my mom would be delighted for people to hear this. She had seen a medium, I think it was last year. Yeah, it must have been last year. And the medium said that this grandpa of mine came to her and said that he had played with me as a little kid. And I was like, I feel that. That feels right. I feel like I've always been sensitive to energies and feelings and spirits. And hearing that through this medium was like, oh yeah, like something that felt really true. But that was something I healed, was this. I was left. It wasn't a parent, but a grandparent that I didn't even get to meet. because I think that was playing into this fear of mine of leaving my kids. And what would that be like for them? It's been this huge and still unfolding journey just of learning to trust and let go and release my fear of not death, but of dying and leaving them, even if it happened tomorrow. And part of that then looked like my parents were very generous and they offered to have us come stay with them while I was like trying to get back to a place of feeling normal. And so 2 weeks after this really huge panic attack and lots of sobbing in the bathtub and processing and therapy and all the things and talking with them about death more and what would happen and how that might look, and that really, it still is hard to talk about, but doing that helped a lot. And that was part of what turned that panic attack into this whopper. We'll call it the whopper. That morning when I was feeling really bad, I was actually talking with my dad on the phone about it. I was like, I don't know what to do. I feel really weird. My head feels funny. My arms feel funny. And so I made the choice to call a nurse line, and they suggested that I come in. And so I had my daughter run over to the neighbor and knock on the door to see if he could stay with the kids and I could find a way to get myself to the ER. And it was that trying to figure out what to do with my two kids to get myself taken care of, like that. And then the fear in my daughter's face when she came back and said he didn't answer and she didn't know what to do. And when, long story, but eventually someone we know dropped me off at the ER and the kids were in the car. And so she was so scared to see me. Yeah, it still brings up so much for me. But she was so scared to see me go walk in and was worried that there was something wrong with me. And that was the hardest part. Whew. Crying on the podcast. It's all right. So the other piece that came up with this whole thing was that I had this feeling like my kids or other people would blame me if I did die and be angry with me. Isn't this so interesting? So again, the actual dying thing doesn't feel scary to me. I trust that something very lovely is on the other side. I don't feel like I know what that is, but I don't feel afraid of that. It's this, oh, they're gonna blame me. My kids will say I didn't do enough, or I should have done XYZ, or maybe they'll blame themselves. And maybe other people will blame me. They'll think, oh, she should have eaten better, or exercised more, or stressed less, or gotten that care, or not gotten that care, and be angry with me. Instead of, if something like that did happen, my hope would be that even though it'd be sad and horrible, that people would take care of my kids and kind of skip all that and get to the other side and be like, wow, this is horrible, but like, how do we make the best of this? And so this feels like the ultimate people pleasing manifestation, right? Oh no, if I do something inconvenient, die, people are gonna be mad and they're gonna blame me. It's hilarious, right? And I think that the whole longevity, ultra health movement plays majorly into all of this. Thinking that we can control so much more than we really can. Like from the outside, these health gurus appear to be doing like everything they can with such control and precision in attempts to live longer and healthier, like without disease, preventable disease, right? And so that if they don't live a long life, if they unexpectedly died, people would say they did everything they could. It feels like we have to earn the right to die without blame. What the fuck? That's crazy, right? And so how does any of this relate to birth? I'm like over here crying on my podcast about death and leaving my kids behind. Like, why am I talking about any of this? Okay, so I think this absolutely ties in to birth, pregnancy, and birth work. I'm going to tell you a few ways. So one is that there's this undercurrent of people talking about the ideal pregnancy health-wise, right? Emotionally, spiritually, physically, in a way that implies or sometimes even directly states that this will guarantee or nearly guarantee a healthy, live baby and this beautiful, perfect birth, which we know is not true and I think is so damaging. And I just was listening to Maren's recent podcast where she speaks to a very lovely woman who had a second trimester loss, and she speaks to this, and I know there's a lots of other places where we've spoken to this too, like women and their direct experience with loss, myself included, where there's this feeling like you've done something wrong, right? And that when it goes right, like I had two miscarriages and then I had two live full-term births, and it feels, oh, I'm either, and I don't actually, I didn't feel like I had a lot of guilt around my miscarriages, actually. But I do remember this feeling when I had these babies that were healthy, live, full-term, happy babies. I did have this feeling of, oh, I did everything right. Look at me. Here they are. And I also had other parts that of my being that knew. I just also got really lucky. but I think that this is really pervasive and, again, damaging, because when people don't have a live baby come out, or they have a baby who's not healthy, or a baby that needs support or surgery or whatever it is, those people often then say, oh, I must have done something wrong. I must be to blame, or someone else must be to blame. And we see this even because we really romanticize more traditional cultures. But even in more traditional cultures, there's a lot of taboo around pregnancy. Things about not wearing certain things or looking at certain things or eating certain things or doing certain things, right? There's a lot of rules. And when I'm not saying those are right or wrong. I don't care, culturally speaking, what people believe, but I think it does speak to an ancientness of this. I don't think it's just a modern problem where women are pointed to as the reason for the success or failure, right, quote unquote, of a pregnancy. And I think that's a lot of pressure. And I do absolutely think there are things we can do to optimize our health, emotionally, spiritually, physically, those things. And I also think that can be taken to an extreme level where we think that it matters more than it does. And I also think that it's not a way to guarantee any kind of outcome. And it's not a way to feel more spiritually superior or something when we're looking at women who maybe don't make those same choices. So I think there's a lot here. And I think at the very core, what I'm trying to say is that we all have these complicated relationships with death, with what that would mean if we died, if our babies died, or if we as a midwife had a client whose baby died or a client who died, right? And we have these really complicated relationships, and often we don't really start teasing them out and looking at them closer until we're forced to, whether that's through someone else's death or through our body saying, I can't not look at this any longer because it needs to be looked at. And so I, knock on wood, haven't had a panic attack in, oh my gosh, it's been 2 months. That's very exciting to note. It feels to me, who knows? I'm definitely at peace with perhaps having more of them. Because again, same thing, right? There's no guarantee here. It's not like I'm graduated because I did XYZ. But right now it feels like I'm in a really good place. And they have ceased, I think, because of the work I did around this relationship with death. And the ongoing work I am still doing. It's not like it's over. It's something I'm studying actively. I'm also doing some training around IFS so that I can offer it to people. at least one flavor of it, somatic parts work. And I also have a lot more support and changed our lives so that logistically, even if I were to die tomorrow, my kids would be okay. Like, they have people here who can take care of them. They have a life here. They have their stuff here. And just even that is such an enormous relief. And again, tying this back to the birth stuff, though, I want to talk a little bit more. And in another episode, I'm going to talk more about this idea of preventing neonatal death. But I want to shift for a second to this birth worker piece. And this all has felt so important for me in terms of this question of how and when will I go back to doing birth work? Because that's the part that I maybe have forgotten to say so far, which is that all of this panic piece, the anxiety stuff, absolutely was impacted by my life as a midwife and being on call for so many years and midwifing in this culture that makes it very hard to do midwifery or birth work in a healthy way because of the culture that we're absolutely just steeped in, all of us, me and the clients. And especially after this experience where I attended this stillbirth, a very unexpected in labor stillbirth where the baby died in the minutes before birth. And again, I don't want to say more than is my part to say, but the way that unfolded afterwards was in some ways really graceful. There was no part of it that was as nightmarish as the experience for a lot of other midwives I know. There was no legal stuff that got pulled in. And at first, my relationship with the family felt really strong. And it was really hard to witness people in that space. But I really feel like I showed up for them and was proud of how I did that. And I really grappled with my own feelings of guilt and blame in what felt to me like a pretty healthy way at the time. I think there's things I would do differently, and maybe that's a podcast for another day. But in general, it felt like this really healthy, positive way to move through together in the early months after this experience that none of us, of course, anticipated or wanted to have happen. And there was so much grief. It was also the very beginning of COVID. It was a really weird time. And like I said, I was really proud, I feel like, of everyone for how they showed up. And I brought in some other community people to support them. And there was something that felt really beautiful at that point. But then something shifted and communication just slowed down and stopped. And many moons later, they communicated with me saying they felt like they did blame me and that it was my responsibility to have delivered a healthy baby. And that really shook me, like, hard. And then some more time passed. I can't remember exactly what happened, but I think they reached out again, or maybe I reached out, and there was like at least initial just like amends making. And they didn't necessarily feel that way anymore, or maybe they did, but they were willing to move past that. But still, like, the relationship has dissolved, for all purposes dissolved, and didn't feel great how it's landed. And there's moments where I wonder what it'll look like 10 years from now, perhaps. But what I'm hoping to share from this very short synopsis of the experience, which could fill a book, is that it really shook my faith in people. And I want to be really careful how I say that, because I don't want it to sound like I'm judging how people grieved, because it's not that at all. It's more like how I just saw so clearly how in our current world, with the things people believe and are taught to believe from a very young age and are reinforced constantly through different narratives, it feels like it might be impossible to trust people enough to be their midwife. Not because anything horrible happened, not because they did anything to me. Like, there was never anything like that other midwives have experienced that can be just really awful, like with the legal system and all of that. But more like the relationship is so important to me between me and the people that I work with. Feeling good. I want it to feel honest. I want it to feel vulnerable. I want it to feel real. That's the world I want to live in. And so there's this piece for sure that contributed to my anxiety and these panic attacks because my worldview was altered. It felt like my dream of being able to be a midwife in the way I want to be one maybe isn't possible in this paradigm, in this world where I currently find myself. And I just think it's really important to name that and be honest about it and not paint midwifery to be something that is all rainbows and roses and really help birth workers acknowledge the stress and the difficulty and maybe just start seeing some of the places where we do have power, though. So I don't want it to all sound hopeless, because I think that this all could shift and can shift, at least in small ways, if we approach it the right way. I had some statistics here I wanted to share with you all. I talked a little bit just now about like how I had some of these feelings of guilt and blame and how that showed up in this relationship, but I wanted to share something from this paper. There's a paper called Blame and Guilt, a Mixed Methods Study of Obstetricians and Midwives' Experiences and Existential Considerations After Involvement in Traumatic Childbirth. And so I just wanted to read you a couple of the results from this. They had 1,200 obstetricians and midwives respond to them. 85% stated that they had been involved in a traumatic childbirth. Most of them, right? I would probably argue the other 15% just haven't been doing it for very long. Or they are people who maybe don't experience things as traumatic or are dissociated. Who knows? And they said is that although blame from patients, peers, or official authorities was feared and sometimes experienced, the inner struggles with guilt and existential considerations were dominant. Feelings of guilt were reported by 36 to 49%, and 50% agreed that the traumatic childbirth had made them think more about the meaning of life. 65% felt that they had become a better midwife or doctor due to the traumatic incident. So just some really interesting info. And what I have experienced doing this work as a midwife and also knowing a lot of midwives and being in like the education realm for midwives, so knowing a lot of midwives that way, is that this is definitely what I've seen. So a lot of midwives feel some amount of guilt, sometimes a crushing amount of guilt after the death of a baby or a traumatic birth. Maybe if the baby didn't die but was in the NICU for many weeks, or had some sort of issues, impairments, whatever, after the birth, that there can be this element of guilt. And what I've seen even more than that, I feel like that usually resolves for people, either with time or peer review or their own processing, like whatever. But what I've seen be the longer term experience, and this was the case for me too, was the existential piece and the philosophical piece, which for me has looked like really unpacking what is reasonable to expect from a midwife or doctor. How do we as a culture balance the desire to reduce neonatal death or death in general in birth, right? How do we balance this desire to reduce death with also this desire to give birth a chance and give women's bodies a chance and trusting them and trusting the process, not intervening too soon. And there is anyone who tells you that there's an absolute way to do this is a fucking liar. They just are. Like, there's no solid answer. And every single birth, except for the ones that are so smooth and easy and just unfold, which does happen a fair amount. So I don't mean to make it seem like it doesn't happen a lot. But for the other births where that's not the case, which is almost always first babies, but not always. I just helped a midwife recently who had a wonky situation with a fifth baby. Who knows? But in these births that are less straightforward, there is no solid, clear-cut answer. Yes, hospitals have protocols. People have their ideas that around really specific recommendations. But the truth is, we don't know. And every person is different. And just because a statistic is true doesn't mean that person will be the statistic. And client choice plays in. And it gets really complex and really complicated quickly. And so this is really what I have come back to after many years of thinking about this. I thought about this from day one of being a midwife, but really since 4 years ago, this has been my number one sort of line of inquiry. And that is, how do we balance all of this? The client making her choices, me making my choices, both of us listening to our intuition. And at the end of the day, sometimes that means a baby will die. Sometimes that means a baby will be injured, or a mother will be injured, or a mother might die. That is part of the realm of possibility every single time that we get called to a birth. It is never not one of the possible outcomes. And how do we show up with a nervous system that is regulated then to a birth so that we can make the best choices we can make knowing that is possible? And how can we help women understand that's possible every single time they get pregnant without terrifying them, right? Like, how do we equip them with the right tools to sit with that and really understand that, so that we're all coming at this process of birth with the blinders off? Because I think that's what we really need for anything to change, for anything to move forward. And at the heart of that is really investigating each individual's relationship with death, every single client, every single midwife, every single doctor. What is it that we have inside of us around that? What feelings come up? What beliefs? What parts do we have? And how can we come to a more balanced place where we can all do our very best and with that understanding, but ideally not from a place of fear? That, I think, is the goal. And I think it's pie in the sky for sure. I don't think it's going to happen tomorrow or maybe ever, but for me, that feels like the work, or at least part of the work that every midwife client dyad should be looking at. Otherwise, there's just so much naivety. And even if somebody intellectually understands that there is a possibility that their baby could die, I think a lot of people are, I know that a lot of women that we work with, even these really cool, amazing women that we work with, and midwives, myself included, we spend so much time in our thinking brain because that's what's prized. That's what we use to earn money most of the time. That's the dominant way of being in the world for Western cultures. And so that thought might be there, oh, yeah, that's a possibility. Or a doctor might say, oh, your baby could die, right? And they're talking statistics. I think we really have to bring the conversation into the body to have the body feel and understand that. Because the body actually knows that already, but there's often a disconnect between mind and body. And so that's the work I think that's the work. So I hope that was interesting and helpful. Hopefully that tied together in some kind of coherent fashion. I'm enjoying doing these more loose styles of episodes. I think my next episode is going to be looking more closely at this idea of preventing neonatal death, maybe looking at some of the rates around the world, how people are reducing the rates, and what the cost of that is. Not just monetarily, that's not what I mean, but what does that mean for women and their experience as well? And just grappling with that question that I had brought up here at the end. That's it from me for now. Side note, we have a couple things coming up here at Indie Birth. The applications for the Sacred Sisterhood Doula Training are due on the 15th, which is coming up very quickly, depending on how fast I get this episode out. And we are also accepting applications for the Indie Birth Midwifery School through June 1st. So those are two updates around the two main programs that we have. All right. Thanks, everybody.
If you enjoyed what you heard, please hit the subscribe button and give this podcast a 5-star review. For more enriching content and conversation around the primal physiological process that is pregnancy, birth, and beyond, please head over to indiebirth.org. And if you are in the Duluth area seeking prenatal and midwifery support, you can find Margo at duluthmidwife.com. Thank you so much for listening. Until next time.